Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a starting receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It's about that time. Happy Tuesday to you all. It is March 26th, 2019. Taking a little breath from the March Madness right after the games that took place at the end of last week, of course, bleeding into the weekend, as we now know who are in the who's in the Sweet 16, and that does include the Michigan State Spartans and the Michigan Wolverines. We touched on how the Spartans and Wolverines ended up in the Sweetness of 16 on Monday's Current Sports, as we also invited Anthony Iani live in studio, motivational speaker and former Michigan State basketball center. Had some fun yesterday, kind of just talking about what happened over the weekend when it comes to Michigan State beating Minnesota, and also that crazy Duke and UCF game that went down to the wire. Duke adhering to the essence of this time of the year in March, right? Survive and advance, because they certainly just survived that matchup. So I had some fun doing that on yesterday's Current Sports. And today I want to talk about the possibility of a Duke and Michigan State matchup. And more so, I want to bring this conversation to the fold as well. I want to ask you all out there, with everything that has happened in the first weekend dating back to 2015 for the Michigan State men's basketball team, I want to ask if now, when looking at this team that is in the Sweet 16 for the first time since then, are you now over what happened back in March last year? Are you over that, or do you need a few more wins for this year's team in order for you to fully be healed from the Syracuse upset, basically a home game for Michigan State? I want to know that. Or are you like, okay, this team has certainly far exceeded my expectations, and I'm happy with where they are right now. Whatever happens against LSU, and whatever happens if they do beat LSU from here on out, I'm fine with it. This team has already accomplished so much in this year that, yeah, I'm totally over what happened against the Syracuse Orange. I want to know how you feel about that. And I also want to bring another conversation to the fold when it comes to college hoops as well. All right? So after that, we will give some love to the Michigan State women's basketball team, recapping what took place in its second round matchup against number one seed Notre Dame last night. A tall order for Susie Merchant Spartans. They fought hard, but eventually came up short in yesterday's NCAA women's basketball tournament. We will talk with WKAR intern and sports director at Impact Sports, Joe Dandrin, who followed the Spartan women in this year's tournament. He'll talk about what happened yesterday, and he'll put in perspective just how much of a success this year was for Susie's team. And on the back end of the show, we'll get to a bit of NBA talk, and we'll talk about the Detroit Pistons and whether or not they can hang on down here in the home stretch of the regular season for a possible postseason bid, all right? If you would like to be a part of the discussion, pick up the phone and dial 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com WKAR News and comment below the live stream there. And you can also tweet us, tweet the show at WKAR News or tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR. Here are your quick hit headliners. Start with the Michigan State women's basketball team falling to Notre Dame last night. Sophomore forward Sydney Cooks had another standout performance in the tourney, but 9-seed MSU ran into a determined number 1-seed Notre Dame. 91-63, your final in the second round last night out in South Bend, Indiana. MSU ends its successful season with a 21-12 record, while Notre Dame once again advances to the Sweet 16, a 32-3 record for that women's basketball powerhouse. The second round game was the final game in the green and white for senior center Jenna Allen, who had a really touching moment when she came off the court and embraced head coach Susie Merchant, just in complete tears as Susie hugged her for about 30 seconds. And then Jenna began to just hug other members of the Michigan State coaching staff and her players, fellow teammates, I should say. Jenna Allen, a 3-year captain for the Spartans, ending her career with 1,098 career points after scoring 12 points last night. For the second straight game, Cooks led MSU with 17 points, 12 rebounds for her first double-double of the year. Off the bench, freshman forward Kayla Bellis added 10 points. More
Finito.
On the... Yeah, Finito. Yeah, but great year for Michigan State women's basketball. We'll talk with Joe Dandron later on this hour as we dive into just how successful of a season this was for Susie Merchant's team, and we'll recap what happened last night. All right, Michigan State Gymnastics had three individuals qualify for the NCAA Regionals, as announced during the selection show last night. Sophomore Leah Mitchell will compete in the all-around. Senior Jessica Ling will compete on the uneven bars. And junior Gabriella Douglas will compete on floor. The three Spartan gymnasts will compete in the Baton Rouge Regional hosted by LSU. The meet will be held April 4th to the 6th at LSU's Maravich Center, with the three Spartans competing on Friday, April 5th. Mitchell will be paired with Arkansas and will be competing in Session 1 starting at 3 p.m., while both Ling and Douglas will be paired with Auburn in Session 2 starting at 8 p.m.
That is Jack Ebling intern Leah Mitchell, so shout out her.
Yeah, Leah Mitchell, I know. Yeah, she does work with Jack Ebling's show here locally, and I know, yeah, she wants to go into sports broadcasting, I believe.
Believe so, yeah.
And it just hit me, too. When speaking of Gabriella Douglas, she has ideally the same name as Gabby Douglas, who is like the Michael Jordan of gymnastics. And also Gabby Douglas announced that this upcoming Olympic bid will be her final year competing in gymnastics. So how about that? Gabriella Douglas, just like Gabby Douglas. Pretty cool stuff there. All right. And Kirk Cousins will
you
be
like
speaking.
That? You like
yeah.
that?
Well, we love this, Kirk, because you will be speaking to graduates here at Michigan State University this spring, along with Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. The East Lansing School announced yesterday that the Michigan State alumni would be commencement speakers. Cousins, of course, played quarterback for Michigan State before being drafted into the NFL back in 2012. He'll speak at the May 3rd undergrad convocation and will get an honorary Doctor of Humanities degree.
You like that? Yeah. You like that?
That's really cool stuff. So I'm wondering, I guess that won't be, like, we got, I know Alec Rio is behind the glass. We got Jack Kerwin and Alec Rio, engineers of the Tuesday, Thursday, and occasionally Friday edition of Current Sports. I know, Jack, you got one more year.
Alec, correct.
You're done in May. That's not your commencement, right? That's not your commencement. That's I'm assuming since Kirk is getting an honorary degree in what, the Doctor of Humanities. He's getting a Doctor of Humanities degree. I'm guessing that's that college that encompasses that college that's there. So, yeah, I guess he won't be speaking at your commencement, Alec. But still very cool that he'll be speaking. And what day do you graduate, Alec? What day? Is that May 4th, 5th, what, 3rd? 4th. May 4th. Okay, May 4th. So congratulations to you as well, my man. I can't believe it's really coming. It's about to be April next week. Crazy stuff. All right. The winged wheel. You know, why not, Jack? You want to tackle this one? Because I know you're all in on the Wings right now, just losing right now. Lose for Hughes. But I guess that didn't play out yesterday when it comes to a matchup against the San Jose Sharks, right?
No, they're on a nice little winning streak with the goal of screwing up their draft odds. So that's lovely. I've watched them suffer all year. I've suffered as a fan all year just for them to go on a stupid winning streak, just like they did at the end of last season to knock themselves down a couple draft slots.
Oh, this happened last year.
It did.
Too.
It did. But they have won their third game of this current West Coast road trip. They now sit at 28-38-10 after defeating the San Jose Sharks 3-2. Dylan Larkin, Andreas Athanasiou, and Christopher N all scored, with N's being shorthanded. And shout out former Spartan Taro Hirose, as this was his fourth game and his fourth point. Four Whoa. Assists.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah, no, it's surprising.
He's on a roll right now. The kid is serious. That's awesome stuff for him. Also, the Detroit Pistons will be taking on the Denver Nuggets on the road tonight. The Pistons are 1-3 on this road trip so far, taking losses from Cleveland, Portland, and Golden State. They will conclude the trip tonight facing Denver, who is looking to rebound from an absolute blowout, losing 124-88 to the NBA's Indiana Pacers on Sunday. The Pistons have lost 5 of 8. Still in the top 8 in the NBA's Eastern Conference, destroying the Nuggets in Detroit on February 4th. That was a 129-103 final. Nikola Jokic leads the Nuggets, Joker, averaging 20.2 points, 10.8 rebounds, and 7.6 assists. Tip time set for 9 p.m. tonight at the Pepsi Center. Also, the Detroit Tigers are underway against the Tampa Bay Rays in spring training action. Of course, opening day for the Tigers taking place next week. And right now, it's the bottom of the second. The Rays holding a 3-0 lead over the Tigers. Really interesting story here. Eminem, the famed rapper from D-Town, Detroit, he got a response from Charlie Ebersole, who is the CEO and co-founder of the AAF Football League. And, you know, Marshall Mathers, again, better known as Eminem, he tweeted the AAF saying, quote, "Dear at the AAF, please entertain this thought regarding the game," I guess. He tagged, like, I don't know, the AAF Iron and AAF Express. I guess those are two teams in the AAF. He tagged those two teams and said, quote, "Allowing the players to actually fight would be key to league success like hockey. I would watch every game, even though there is no Detroit team yet. Hint, in parentheses, don't blow it. Sincerely, Marshall." And then the CEO, the league CEO, tweeted back at Eminem, quote, "Detroit is not a bad idea for a future franchise. Let me know if you want in on it." So, a couple things here. First off, Jack and Alec, I don't know if you allow fighting in the AAF, if that's going to boost popularity and everybody's going to be watching, because you can fight in hockey and the TV ratings are, again, it's a niche sport. Number two, how successful do you guys think the AAF truly is going to be? Because I feel like I've seen this pony show before with the XFL back in the day, and that didn't do too hot. I don't know. I think the only draw
is, and I know Johnny Football is going to be playing, you have to get like these big names who, you know, were big names in the NFL, and for some reason or another, their careers didn't pan out, or maybe they're on the last leg of their careers. You got to get names like that in order to put butts in the seat and in order to get people to click on and watch these games. But I don't know if I'm all in on the AAF. I'm not sure.
Conversely, I'm completely out on the AAF for the reasons you basically just mentioned. For one, you're never going to get great players in the AAF just because, I mean, the NFL is always going to be king in that regard. And, I mean, even with Johnny Manziel, who I think is the most tantalizing player they could ever get, even then, I think he's only going to be interesting for so long, even if he stays in the AAF. Like, to me, I'm completely out on the idea of alternative football leagues between this one and the XFL. It doesn't do anything for me, so I don't see it sticking around, just like the XFL didn't the first time.
Exactly. Because we all know who the big dog in town is. You know what I mean? We all know what the big show in town is. That's the NFL. The NFL dominates. So, I don't know. We'll see. I give it maybe 2 years. Maybe. I'll put the cat there, folks.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, it's never talked about, and then, you know, maybe in 2 years at some point, people are going to realize the XFL is going under, and we're all just kind of going to be like, oh, yeah, that's still a thing.
Right, exactly. So. It's like an afterthought, right? So, oh, and last but not least, I saw this right before I closed my eyes and went to Dreamland last night. UFC star Conor McGregor announced his unexpected retirement from mixed martial arts in a social media post in the early hours of today. The announcement came just hours after McGregor told The Tonight Show, starring Jimmy Fallon. They really had a really cool bit in which the two met up at like a local Irish pub in New York City and just kind of just kicked the breeze. It was really awesome. But in a pre-taped interview, he announced that him and the UFC were negotiating a potential return to the octagon in July, which, again, makes this really surprising news. McGregor has, quote-unquote, retired on social media before. If you remember, back in April of 2016, he announced on Twitter, quote, "I have decided to retire young. Thanks for the cheese. Catch yous later." And he returned to the octagon. So I'm not completely buying it. I think we'll see Conor McGregor back in the octagon soon. So I don't know. Maybe he was just in his feelings last night. I don't know. All right, that does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That is the number to call. I see a few of you already weighing in on social media at facebook.com/WKAR News. Ben, I see ya. I'm going to read a few of your comments in just a second. Also, you can tweet us. Tweet the show at WKAR News or tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR. Again, happy Tuesday to you all, beautiful people. The weather's getting so nice, isn't it? You know, spring, I don't want to say that spring is officially here, even though it is officially here. We turned the page on winter, according to the calendar, last week, and we are starting to feel that change a bit, which is nice, but it's Michigan. I wouldn't be surprised if it's snowing come next week, but it's a beautiful day here in mid-Michigan. The sun is out, you know, a few clouds in the sky, but the sun is out. Temperatures in the 40s. It's supposed to get into the 50s for the next 2 days after this. Awesome stuff. So wherever you are listening, I hope that your day is going well. And thank you for allowing WKAR's current sports. to be a part of your Tuesday. A few things I want to get to. First off, I want to ask the question to our listeners out there that, you know, when it concerns the Michigan State men's basketball team, you know, this season has already been quite remarkable. You know, we all know what this team has done. Winning at least a share of the Big Ten regular season championship. Doing it in a game in which you play your in-state rival at the Breslin Center. That was quite the moment, right? And then they didn't stop there. Going against what I thought they should have done. But Izzo is too competitive. This team is too competitive. They said, skip the rest. We are going for the Big Ten Tournament Championship now. And they also ended up winning the Big Ten Tournament Championship, winning in a game over in-state rival Michigan on St. Patrick's Day. And then all of the criticism that came right after that moment because the committee, oh, this college basketball committee, right? They decided to put Michigan State in the East region along with the Duke Blue Devils, Michigan State a 2 seed, and Michigan State had to play another Big Ten game in the second round, handles business, a 20-point victory over the Minnesota Golden Gophers, booking a ticket for the first time to the Sweet 16 since 2015. Quite the year, right? And for me, when looking at this season, you know, not quite knowing, I remember having this discussion, you know, near like the beginning, the very beginning of the Michigan State men's basketball year. We didn't quite know where the expectations should be placed when this year Spartans. You know, would you be happy with, you know, can this team win a Big Ten championship? You know, is this a team that can go to a Final Four? We just didn't know because when you lose, again, two NBA draft lottery picks, there's a lot of question marks for that team the following year. And Michigan State has really exceeded the expectations of so many, including myself. And in the eyes of just me, this is me just talking here. This is my opinion. I don't care what happens this weekend. I don't care what happens Friday night. And if they get past LSU, whatever happens in that Elite Eight matchup, this season already is a success for me. And I think in many regards, it has put to bed the disappointment of what happened this time last year.
Shazam!
Yeah. Michigan State losing in that second round matchup to Syracuse. You know, still, when you think about it, you know, you can't help but have some kind of emotion because that team was arguably Tom Izzo's most talented team ever. And you lose to a team that barely made it in the tournament. That pesky zone bothered you. You know, the whole discussion about Ben Carter being in instead of Jaren Jackson Jr. in crunch time. You know, and, you know, I saw an interview, too. I want to give a big shout-out to, you know, my former boss at Channel 6, WLNS-TV6, Fred Heumann. I watched Channel 6's March to Glory special Wednesday of last week. And, you know, he does, Fred does these and has been doing these sit downs with Izzo, you know, every week of the tournament, you know, since forever. And, you know, Fred asked Izzo whether or not the thought crossed his mind of stepping down as head coach of the Michigan State men's basketball. Did you think about that at all? And Izzo gave, you know, he paused and gave a very honest answer and said, oh, yeah. Definitely thought about it. You know, because those who look at that season last year and don't acknowledge the distraction that was the ESPN report, that, you know, that was Paula Levine and the Travis Walton and Adrian Payne and Keith Abling situation, those who look at last year and the disappointment that it was around this time of the year and don't acknowledge that, yeah, they were dealing with a major distraction when it comes to the off-the-court stuff from that ESPN report. Those that don't acknowledge that and can't put the puzzle pieces together and think to yourself that, yeah, I'm pretty sure that affected that team in some way, shape, or form, you're lying to yourself. Heck, I remember when the story first broke and going into that locker room and trying to interview players and just how awkward it was, and you could kind of tell that they were certainly coached as to how to respond to the questions that were going to be coming from us as it pertains to that ESPN report. And they're just sitting there saying, look, man, I'm just focusing on basketball. We're focusing on the season, game after game. Well, what do you think about the report? You know, is this becoming a distraction? I'm just focused on basketball. I'm just focused on the game, one game at a time. Well, what do you think about Tom Izzo? Is he handling this well? Is this bothering you guys at all? I'm just focused on basketball. I'm just taking it one game at a time. They were certainly coached in that moment. And you could feel, you know, the whole moment out in Maryland and the ESPN reporter following Izzo to the locker room. That I'm sure that had something to do with Michigan State's performance on the court. To what extent, that's up for debate. But everything that happened last year and what this team has done this year, I think this has healed a little bit of the wound that was and still is the Syracuse loss. But I want to know what you guys think when it pertains to that discussion. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. Again, tweet the hour at WKAR News or tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR. Jack, I want to, and Jack and Alec behind the glass, I want to ask you guys that question. What has transpired this year with the Big Ten Tournament Championship, with the Big Ten Regular Season Championship, now going to the Sweetness of 16? Have you guys gotten over what happened last year?
For me, I think they just need to beat LSU just because LSU doesn't have Will Wade coaching. If Will Wade were still coaching at LSU, if he weren't suspended, then I would be with you. But to me, I think it would be a disappointment for Michigan State to lose to LSU on Friday just because I think they're a better team than LSU, and LSU doesn't have their head coach. But I'm close. I mean, it's not fair to expect a win in the Elite Eight, especially should they face Duke, just because there's no Josh Langford, there's no Kyle Arnes. So from that standpoint where I'm at, I still think it would be a disappointment if they lost to LSU, but no, I've been extremely impressed, and I mean, they've really shattered all expectations I had for them this year.
Definitely. What about you, Alec? Has this season made you kind of forget? I don't think you can forget about it. You can't forget about it. But have you looked at this year differently in a way of, you know, kind of putting into context what happened against Syracuse last season? Has this made you say, all right, we forgive what happened last year with Michigan State?
I mean, my time here as a student at MSU, I've witnessed the losses to Middle Tennessee and Syracuse, both of which were just unbelievable games that I absolutely did not expect for the teams to lose. And this year, I definitely am happy as a Spartan fan at heart, you know, growing up loving the Spartans. You know, compared to the other 3 years, this has been much better. You're seeing more players stepping up. You're seeing Nick Ward finally, you know, getting the opportunities in the paint that he's finally getting that he didn't get right after coming after injury. You got just all around better effort, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable what Izzo has done. I think, you know, when you look back at this season, again, regardless of how this year ends, when you look back at this season, this is arguably maybe the, because I don't, anytime you win a national championship, that's a pretty good year, right? But when you take into account all of the adversity and all of the injuries, you can make an argument that this may have been Tom Izzo's best coaching job. Pretty remarkable stuff. Going to facebook.com right now, /WKAR News, getting a few comments that are coming in there. And first off, let's see here. Ben is, I'm trying to pick out one comment here from Ben. Ben says, this is the 40-year anniversary of the 79 National Championship, and guess who they beat in the NCAA tournament that year on their way to the National Championship? You guessed it, LSU. So the same thing could happen Friday this year. This could be LSU they could beat, excuse me, LSU and go on to win the national championship. I agree with you, Jack. I think that when you look at this LSU team, I mean, my goodness, how this team punched his ticket to the Sweet 16 without Will Wade and the whole controversy there and getting caught on one, courtesy of a phone tap, discussing payments to a possible recruit, all of that drama, and the fact that LSU and those young men have put that to the side and now are in the sweetness of 16 is pretty remarkable. And I do believe, and I think right now the line opened, Michigan State is a 6-point favorite, I believe, in that game.
Minus six, yep.
It's at six, right? Yep. Yeah, I saw that on Bovada yesterday. But don't make any mistake about it. You know, LSU, when I looked at this LSU team, first off, what stand out to me, Jack, is that they are very athletic. This is a very athletic team, and they rebound. They do two things very, very well. They rebound very well, and they force you to commit a lot of turnovers defensively. They really do. And the thing about LSU, and that's the thing about MSU, I mean, gosh, they had 22 turnovers on Saturday against Minnesota. And as I stated on Monday, if that was against any other competition, you know, I don't know if Michigan State would have pulled that victory out. 22 turnovers. That can't happen. But, you know, I expect, you know, if I had to, you know, give you an early prediction, I think that Michigan State is going to beat LSU. And then comes big, bad Duke. And got to admit, my perception of Duke has changed a bit now. I think that you can beat Duke. I just don't think Michigan State will. For a couple of reasons. And people look at that UCF game and say, look at that, Al. UCF had Duke on the ropes and they could have won it, you know, if it wasn't for the Aubrey Dawkins miss. And there were a few other things that led to UCF not winning that game as well. Steve Finnemore, you know, I commented, and I don't think you can argue with this, without a doubt, that Duke and UCF game was the best game of the NCAA tournament, without a doubt. And, you know, I put a status out there saying that, and Steve Finnemore kind of broke it down. Steve Finnemore, head coach of the Lansing Sexton Big Reds here locally in the area. And Steve pointed out the little things that sometimes get overlooked in a game. And he brought up, number one, giving up the offensive rebound and the off the missed free throw in that game that UCF did. And Aubrey Dawkins just did not box out whatsoever. And Duke got a second chance at the bucket. And also that missed putback at the end, and again, the Aubrey Dawkins missed layup. We all know that, but not stating the obvious. You know, Steve also brought up, and this was big as well. And I tweeted out this: the missed alley-oop dunk that could have put UCF up six. That was huge.
Because ridiculous that, play, so stupid.
Right? I mean, it's just like slow up your dribble, give a bounce pass down low. And either, you know, throw up a pump fake and maybe create some contact and get fouled, or just go for the layup, man. Just lay the ball up. You don't have to get fancy. You know, that missed alley-oop caused a swing in that game. Duke came down, made a three. That's a 5-point swing.
You know what it reminded me of when I was watching it in real time? It was the AFC Championship this year when the Patriots threw the interception, but Dee Ford lined up offsides.
Exactly.
Right after the play happened, it was like the Patriots are going to win. Right after they swatted that alley-oop, it was like, oh, Lord, I knew Duke was going
to
win.
It's the little things, right, Jack? I mean, you have to handle the little things. I mean, that play is one of those fancy plays that it's cool if you put it down, but if you mess it up, oh, my goodness, you deserved you deserve a reaming from your head coach. You deserve a Tom Izzo and Aaron Henry for that one, right? and you know, that's the thing. We're looking at that game, though. Duke does look vulnerable, but how UFC was UFC? I'm thinking of Conor McGregor right now. UCF, how UCF was able to push Duke to its limits? Two factors. One, they play great zone defense. That zone, when you play zone, that bothers the Blue Devils. You know, opposition has played zone a few times this year, and Duke, it's bothered Duke. Heck, I can go to the Syracuse game. Jim Boeheim is known for playing the zone, right? We all know that, Spartan fans. And if you look at that game that led to the upset, the Orange beating the Blue Devils, they played zone the entire game, and Duke was just like, I don't know what to do. And a lot of that is because Duke is not a great three-point shooting team. Clog the lane, make them shoot threes, because they can't shoot threes. They shoot a 30% clip from down low. Oh, excuse me, from deep. And number two, I mean, it helps when you're playing zone and you have a 10-foot, 11 center. My goodness, Taco Fall, he's a mammoth of a man. He's like one of those giants that you see on Game of Thrones. I mean, that dude is, he's huge. And, you know, anytime somebody tried to drive, you know, and Taco picked up some cheap fouls here and there. But whenever Taco was disciplined and didn't lunge into the defender, I don't know why he has to do that because he's 11 feet too. If he just put his hands up, how can you see the basket? How are you going to get over that man? So that also helped. Michigan State doesn't have a 20-foot, 11-inch big man down low, and they don't play zone. So that's going to be interesting. But again, this time of the year, if you want to win a national championship, if Izzo wants to get number two, heck, you got to go through some legit competition. And wouldn't that be something if Izzo did beat a Blue Devils team like this one? So I don't think MSU would beat Duke, but I think it would be competitive. That's going to be a really competitive game. I'll tell you that. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we hope to have Joe Dandrin on the phone, a WKAR intern and assistant sports director at Impact Sports. Joe is going to recap the Michigan State women's basketball year, unfortunately coming to a close last night at the hands of one seed Notre Dame. That and more, you are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Let's get to our guest right now. His name is Joe Dandrin. You guys know him well. He's an intern here at WKAR. He's also an assistant sports director at Impact Sports. And he followed and has followed the Michigan State women's basketball team all year, following them, of course, in the NCAA tournament as well. Unfortunately, Susie Merchant and the Spartans, their season came to an end yesterday at the hands of number one seed Notre Dame, a program that is so, 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 so good. The Spartans put up a good fight, but in the end, it was the Fighting Irish moving on in what was a home game for them. Joe, first off, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. How you doing, my man?
I'm good. How you doing now?
Always good chatting with your brother. I just want to get your initial reaction. You know, when the final buzzer sounded last night and, you know, the final score in that game revealed a 91-63 win for the Fighting Irish. What went through your thoughts reflecting on the year that has been for Michigan State?
I mean, I think if you looked at the beginning of the year with how that team performed against some of those ranked opponents, the way that they played against Oregon, Iowa, Maryland, Minnesota, you wouldn't have expected an outcome like that. I mean, obviously, drawing Notre Dame in South Bend is not the, best scenario for a team. So, I mean, they barely snuck past Central Michigan in the game before, so it was just a really tough draw. And I thought the team, I mean, I thought that was kind of indicative of their season, it was very up and down, and so was that game. And I felt like, I felt like in a lot of ways the team, I mean, I guess covering a team for a whole year, you could say a little bit, I kind of felt like they might have deserved a different end, especially Allen, the senior.
Yeah, Jenna Allen, the senior who, really is the heart and soul of this year's Spartan team. And Joe, speaking of the seeding, you know, getting that tough draw, I'm wondering, when you talk with Susie Merchant about that draw, what was her reaction? Was she happy with the draw, or did she want to be seeded somewhere else?
I mean, I think she's an alma mater of her alma mater, is Central Michigan. So I think she was happy to be facing off against the Chippewas because, you know, she played there. And I think that, you know, she liked the idea of playing an in-state school too. And also South Bend is not a too far of a trip for Spartan fans. I think she was okay with it. Obviously, we asked some questions about, you know, well, if you win the first one, you're going to be facing Notre Dame. She says, well, yeah, I mean, if we go anywhere else, we're going to be facing, you know, if we were a 9 seed anywhere else, we'd probably be facing the 1 seed right off the bat. So I think she was just, you know, kind of, I didn't think it really mattered to her. I thought that whether they were going to go be down in Texas facing Baylor or if they would be, you know, facing Notre Dame, I don't think it really mattered.
Right, and that's just the competitive nature of Susie Merchant, and she always talks about, look, if you want to be the best, you have to beat the best, and Notre Dame is certainly up there, right? They are the defending national champions, for goodness sake. So, evaluating that game last night, you know, I mentioned how Sydney Cooks led MSU with 17 points and 12 rebounds, her first double-double of the season. You mentioned Jenna Allen, three-year captain for the Spartans, ending her career with a little over 1,000 career points, 12 points last night for her. Just kind of break down what happened last night. What were your takeaways, and how do you evaluate how the Spartans performed?
Well, I think they got some really good minutes from the freshmen, and Sydney Cooks, of course, as a sophomore. Caleb Ellis, Tori Osmond, and Nia Clowden all really played a ton of minutes down the stretch, especially in that third and fourth quarter when it really got away from Michigan State. And Sydney Cooks looked very, very good. I think that she's kind of the heir apparent, you might say, to Jenna Allen's position as the starting center. I think that she's going to step into that role and, you know, perform at a very high level. I think she brings a lot of things offensively and a lot of size in the paint that Michigan State is going to, you know, enjoy having for the next two seasons.
Definitely. And, you know, this Notre Dame squad has only lost three games throughout the entire year, a 32-3 record. You know, when looking at Notre Dame and that kind of a women's basketball powerhouse collegiately, what makes that team so special, Joe?
I mean, I remember watching Notre Dame warm up before they faced off against the 16 seed, Bethune-Cookman. That team, you could just tell, is together. They warm up together. They shoot around and all those kinds of things. Like, I mean, they're constantly moving as a, you know, kind of a group. And it showed a lot of unity on that team, I felt like. And they definitely showcased that on the court. And they've got a lot of seniors, Shepard, Ngumbawale, and then, of course, Jackie Young, the junior guard. The three of them are all they're all very talented, and they're all very experienced, and that helps you. And then, of course, Muffet McGraw is the head coach. She's made 10 straight Sweet 16s now. And that kind of, you know, that kind of ability as a head coach, along with her ability to recruit and, you know, get them ready every game day. I think that's just continuity as a program, and you really saw that being at Notre Dame.
Yeah, certainly. And with that win over the Spartans, Notre Dame now heads to Chicago to take on Texas A&M, who squeaked out a really close win against Marquette, 78-76. That should be a really interesting matchup. Who's the favorite in your eyes to win this whole thing, Joe?
I mean, I think you got to go with Notre Dame because they returned pretty much everybody from the national championship team the year before. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Ngumbawale, the girl who hit the game-winning shot in the national championship last year, she is, you know, one of the most impressive individual players I've seen, you know, outside of maybe Ionescu from Oregon. So I think that the leader in this team, I think the sky's the limit for them, and they've got to be considered the favorite with what they returned from the national championship team and then, of course, you know, along with the freshmen they've brought in.
Yeah, it's very true. And, you know, Ngumbawale, she is so fun to watch. You know, it was great watching her last night, actually. And, you know, she's garnered attention from the likes of people like Kobe Bryant for her play. And you know what? You know, what's so interesting to me, Joe, you know, a couple of years ago, we were just having a discussion about Gino Auriemma at UConn and the dynasty that he has built there in the world of women's college basketball. UConn is, I know, a 2 seed in this year's tournament. Have they fallen off a bit? Does that mean that, you know, now the field is kind of wide open for a team like Notre Dame to build its own dynasty in this kind of world of women's college basketball today?
No, I mean, I think that just in general, the talent and the recruiting of other programs has kind of caught up with UConn at this point. And I think it's just kind of the playing field is even a little bit for the Huskies. I think that's made a big difference this year, and I think it will throughout the rest of the tournament. I think Notre Dame, they've been good for, you know, the better part of 10 years under McGraw. So I think that that team is, I mean, they've been there. I don't think it's the fact that they just come up now. I think that they've, you know, been one of the top programs. And then also, I mean, and UConn isn't really faltering anything. I just think the other teams that they faced off with this year, they had a really tough schedule. I think that all the other teams are just as good. And I think that it's really just caught up to them on a, from a recruiting standpoint, which then in turn creates a kind of, you know, gets rid of that talent disparity that you've seen in years past.
Yeah, definitely. More parity is never a bad thing, I say. But it also is really cool watching history be made in a dynasty like UConn. All right, Joe, one final question for you. When looking back at the year that was for Michigan State this season, what are going to be your biggest takeaways, and how do you think we should remember the 2018-19 Spartans?
I think that the team can't be defined by, you know, the low moments. I think that the big moments that you saw when they took down the Ducks, when they, you know, beat Maryland, I think those games say a lot more about the team than those tough losses to Nebraska or Wisconsin or Northwestern on the road. I think that those games don't speak to how talented this team really was. And I think that it's also big that they're only losing one person. Obviously, Jenna Allen, you said, the three-year captain. She's a huge part of this program and what they've been able to do, and a very big emotional leader. But I think that they're going to be able to replace that. And obviously, the legacy that she leaves here at State, I think, is a lot, you know, deeper than stats and accolades. I think she left an imprint on the program that was, you know, maybe didn't have Player of the Year awards and all that, but she meant a lot to the program more than just that. So I think that's tough in that sense. It's tough to replace, but I think they will be back to where they were this year, if not better, next season.
Joe, awesome job. Again, Joe Dandrin, WKAR intern and assistant sports director at Impact Sports. Really appreciate your time, Joe. Thank you so much, man. Great job.
Yeah, have a good one, Al.
All right, you too, man. Let's hit our final break. When we come back, we'll talk to Ray from Indiana. That's always fun. And want to make some points concerning March Madness and the crazy amount of money that is thrown around due to the tournament. Got a few points I want to make. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have exactly 10 minutes left here before we close out this Tuesday edition of the show. Let's go to our phone lines. Ray from Indiana is the one line two. Ray, what's up, man?
Go Red Raiders! Red Raiders! Red Raiders! Beat the Bullies! The Bullies! The Bullies!
Yeah, I know you're going to be certainly pulling for the Red Raiders come this weekend. I believe both Michigan State and Michigan, I believe both play on Friday night, right, guys? No? Michigan plays on Thursday?
Yeah, Michigan's on Thursday. Yep.
Ah, Michigan plays on Thursday. All right, so we'll be breaking that game. I'm excited to hear your call then.
I think you're on at 7 o'clock. They're on at 10 right. o'clock. I'm not staying up to watch the Bullies. I'll wake up about midnight and call. I'll pray that the Bullies got beat.
Okay, gotcha. That's what you're going to do, Ray. Okay, you're not going to watch the entire game.
Hey.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you watch that Duke UCF game?
Of course. We've been talking about it for the last, we talked about it today and on Monday's
Duke
Current Sports, too.
Lucky.
They did. They really did. I really thought
two in and out. I mean, what are the chances of two in and outs like that?
I know. I thought Aubrey Dawkins had, you know where Aubrey Dawkins began his collegiate career, Ray? You want to guess?
Huh?
Do you want to guess where Aubrey Dawkins, the guy who missed that final put in, to possibly win the game. Do you know where he played basketball at first? The Michigan Wolverines. You don't remember Aubrey Dawkins rocking the maize and blue?
No, not really. How long ago was that?
Oh, man. That was his freshman year. Can we look that up, guys?
I think his first 3 years. I believe it was 2014 to 2016.
2014 to 2016. We'll double check that. But, yeah, he was there. Well, I remember him on the bench.
Was he good there?
He wasn't a...
I can't imagine he was. I'll look up his stats right now.
Yeah, can we look up his stats? But yeah, he played ball at Michigan, and you know, he's the son of Coach Dawkins at UCF, and you know, Aubrey grew up really admiring the Duke Blue Devils. But yeah, he played basketball at Michigan at first. And
well, I'll tell you what, he had a heck of a game, but I'll tell you what.
Really good.
Yeah. That Williamson guy, he's the greatest athlete I've ever seen.
You think he's the greatest? He's really good. Don't get me. I think he's the greatest college athlete that we've seen. And to say greatest athlete ever, I don't know. I think you could. I still go with Bo Jackson for me, Ray. Bo Jackson is still
well,
that guy.
I know
me.
It's,
but he's good.
You, that guy can jump out of the gym. The only hope you got when you play Duke, if you get by this next game, is you got to call. Like that one guy, 1 out of 9, you got to go 5-on-4 like they did, Sag in the middle, and somehow box him out. I don't know how you're going to box him out because he jumps over people.
And that's the thing, you know, if the Spartans do play the Duke Blue Devils, which I think that's probably going to happen, how do you guard Zion? Who do you put on Zion?
You glue one of Xavier Tillman's butt cheeks to one of Zion Williamson's butt cheeks.
That's the only way. That's
and then way. You have help on every single drive, and hopefully they run the zone defense they ran at the beginning of the year during Midnight Madness to show all the right. fans, and right. they keep Duke to the perimeter as much as possible.
That's what they got to do. I think you got to go zone here. You got to go
yeah.
zone.
If
you know?
They can. Yeah.
Izzo has been, you know, toying with the idea for a minute now. And I think dating back to, like you just said, Jack, you know, Midnight Madness, excuse me. And I think that, you know, you can't guard Zion one-on-one with anybody on the Spartans team. The only hope, Matt McQuay, but Matt McQuay can't guard anybody.
It's got to be Xavier Tillman. No, because he's a big and he's our best defensive big. But they can't have the goal to stop Zion either.
Yeah, you can't.
He's going to get his. You just got to limit him as much as possible.
Right.
Here's the deal. They're terrible 3-point shooting. You're right about the sag and everything else.
Yep.
But also, if you can get some people in there to foul, they don't miss. They miss a lot of their free throws, too.
Right. They're not a great free throw shooting team.
That can come back
either.
To bite them.
It can. You got to make them shoot. And I'm with you, Jack. I agree with you guys. I think Zion is going to get his regardless. He is that kind of a talent. He's that kind of an athlete. You just got to hope that guys like Trey Jones, guys like R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish, you got to hope that they don't also go off on you. There's a lot of talent on that Duke team. So I don't know. I don't think Michigan State would beat the Blue Devils, though. I got them losing in I got Michigan State. I got the party ending against Duke in my bracket, my main bracket, out of 58. So,
well, they're going to have to play better than they did in that last game. I think they were very vulnerable.
They got a really good draw. The Spartans did when they played the Golden Gophers. I think that Louisville would have gave them more problems, but you know, and especially you know with Kyle Murphy? Jordan Murphy. I don't know why I said Kyle. Jordan Murphy being out really helped Michigan State. And the fact that Minnesota has no offense whatsoever, it's basically just give the ball to Amir Coffey and let him find a way to score. And if he doesn't, you got no other plan B. So Michigan State got a really good draw against Minnesota in that game. Not to take anything away from the Spartans.
Second greatest rebounder in the history of the Big Ten next to Jerry Lucas out for that game.
Yeah, he's really good. Jordan Murphy was a big loss for that team.
And you're playing what, LSU this next game?
LSU Friday night, a little after 7 o'clock, 7:09 p.m. to be exact. So,
all right, buddy.
All right, Ray. Thanks for the call, my man. Do you have Aubrey Dawkins stats at all, Jack? I'm curious. I'm wondering what kind of career because I remember when he was on the team. I just can't remember how good he was.
Yeah, no, I got his stats. So. It looks like he hasn't really played basketball the past two seasons. Obviously, one of those he probably was sitting out due to a transfer.
Yeah.
Then the other one he might have been injured. I'm not really sure. But he played 13 games for the Wolverines in 2014-2015, averaged 7 points. The next season he played 9 games and averaged 6.5 points. So it sounds like he's had some injuries would be my guess there.
I'm reading here. He sat out that full season when he transferred to UCF. And then it says that Dawkins suffered a season-ending injury before the 2017-18
men's basketball year. So it doesn't say exactly what kind of an injury that was, but yeah, he did get injured, at least when he went to UCF.
Yeah. Oh, so. I'm sorry. No, he was never injured at Michigan. Those were games started. He started 13 games for the Wolverines his first year, started 9 the second year, but he appeared in all 36 in 2015, 2016, played in 30 in 2014, 2015.
Okay. And he had some pretty, I'm looking here on
he
March
played.
3rd.
They used him.
Well, against Northwestern, he had a career-high 21 points in a 49-minute double overtime appearance. And on March 7th, they won the Big Ten Conference finale against Rutgers. He had a career-high 31 points in that game. So he had a few standout performances when he was out in Ann Arbor. So, and he was awesome. My goodness, they didn't have an answer for Aubrey Dawkins. Duke did on Sunday. It was so fun watching him play. He hit the jumpers. He was driving. He's very athletic young man. So
it looks like he just left Michigan in favor of Central Florida just when his dad took the job there, wanted to play for him.
That's
so.
Why. Okay, and that's awesome stuff. Coach K, too, got very emotional after that Duke win over UCF because, Coach Dawkins is like a son to him, and they are really, really close. Their families are really, really close. Coach K watched Aubrey grow up. So that was really tough for him to beat a close friend and family member, basically, in Coach Dawkins. So, okay, as we come up now with just 90 seconds left here in the hour, I'll begin the show with this discussion because I want to talk about, and we've hit on this without a doubt. Last week we had Natalie Kerwin on, current sports beat reporter, whose beat for this semester is sports gambling. We've been talking about the amount of money that's being bet on in the world of the NCAA tournament. But, I read an Associated Press story today that talks about the incentives that colleges who are in the Big Dance, the moolah incentives that are given to respective schools depending on how far they go in the tournament. And folks, the amount of money that, again, if you progress in the tournament, the amount of money that you get, your respective university gets, is mind-blowing. I'll put that into context as it pertains to how the student-athlete sees absolutely none of it. All right, there's some layers to this conversation that I don't think many people have talked about when discussing the college athlete getting paid. So I'll bring that story to you tomorrow and so much more.
What are you saying, Al? Are you implying that the NCAA's new commercial about the life of a student athlete isn't realistic?
Not at all.
Horrible. Horrible.
Not at all, right? We'll get to that on Wednesday's version of Current Sports. Be easy, people.